5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Yes, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. And before we get underway with our next interview, we want you to connect with us online at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. And as always, twice is nice. You can go back and listen to the best of the Big E Sports Show at Yahoo Sports Radio /podcast. And right now, it is time to go around the horn. We are back in the saddle with our favorite producer, and that, of course, is Andy Pondillo. And Andy, gosh, it has been very exciting in postseason play. Some compelling matchups, no doubt about it.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun this first series here through the division series. You know, no five-game series. You saw two sweeps, so you think that this might have been a bit of a blowout, but every single series had close games. Every single series had leads that were blown, and every single series had some goats involved in it. So it's a lot of fun as we head into the second round.
Well, I've got a number of questions all lined up, ready to get after it. And so when we talk about the Nationals, they went into the series, Andy, as the best team in the National League, but their at-bats were really indicative of being one of the worst teams. I mean, they truly choked. I mean, what happened?
Well, they faced the Giants on an even year, and you don't want to face the Giants on an even year. 2010, 2012, maybe 2014. I don't know, but regardless, the Nationals should have been favored in every single regard in this series. It's not that they just have better hitters. They have a deeper pitching staff. I felt like they had a deeper bullpen, and they definitely have one of the best offenses in all of baseball, but when you get to postseason play, when you get in a short series, every pitch means more, every hit means more, everything means more. And if you're going to go out there and you're going to make fundamental mistakes, you're just going to throw games away. You know, you look at the Nationals, they have the Giants down to the final out in Game 2. That game goes 18 innings. The Nationals obviously had opportunities to win that game even after they blew the lead. And even then, Jordan Zimmermann, one out away from a complete game, shut out at 100 pitches exactly, taken out after he issues a walk after a couple questionable calls off the plate that gave the walk to the Giants. So, and then Matt Williams comes in, takes him out, closer blows the save. I'm not a big fan of that move. I think if you're going to ride these guys, this is your ace. This is your guy that's been with you the whole season. You just threw a no-hitter right before that start. Why not let him finish the game? The runner's at first. He's not in scoring position. The Giants haven't done anything offensively the whole game. Anytime you bring a fresh arm in, especially in postseason play, you honestly just don't know what you're going to get. Now, every situation's got to be evaluated differently. In that situation, that moment, that's what swung the series to me. Matt Williams got trigger happy, and a lot of these managers get trigger happy in postseason play.
Yahoo Sports Radio producer Andy Pondillo is joining us on the Stewart Cadillac guest line right here at YSR. And so as you're highlighting, you're breaking it down, and you're talking about just all the fundamental mistakes that happened in that particular series. I mean, how much responsibility should Matt Williams take?
I think you should get a percentage. Now, you can't ever just blame the manager, and it's always the manager's fault. That's the easy thing to do. But he has to take some blame. They didn't look ready to play, and the games they lost really weren't losses they probably should have taken. We talked about Game 2, but also Game 4, the final game of the series where the Giants lose or the Giants win 3-2. All three of those runs the Giants scored, they should not have come across the plate. Gio Gonzalez, two blunders in the field that led to a two-run inning. Your pitcher's got to be able to make plays. He couldn't make a play on a bunt. A ball hit right back to him, gets through his legs. That's an easy double play. PFP in spring training, pitchers fielding practice. He's going to be doing a lot of that in spring training, but the sample size is so small in the postseason. You can have a couple bad games in the regular season. You can have a few clinkers. You can lose seven in a row, rebound, and still be the best team in baseball. But in postseason play, The best players absolutely have to show up. There's something to be said about postseason experience. The Giants, they don't look flashy. They look ugly sometimes. They don't hit with runners in scoring position. Their lineup looks pretty thin. At times, their bullpen looks a little thin, but they always find a way to do it because they've been there, they've done that. The Nationals now twice in the last 3 years have lost in a divisional round where I think they should have been favored in both matchups.
Well, and Andy, that's what it's all about in postseason play, finding a way to win.
Definitely, they have to find ways to win. Instead, they found ways to lose. Really, they were in winning position. I guess the one good thing you could say about the Nationals is Bryce Harper had a coming out party.
He did.
Bashing those three long home runs was essentially their whole offense at times. So you look to next season for the Nationals, you got to be excited to try and get this guy healthy. He shouldn't be batting in the sixth hole for much longer. He should be your three hitter. He should be your franchise, but he's got to stay healthy to do that. He really showed what he's capable of in this division series. Now if the rest of the team can get around him, play fundamental baseball, he can have all the talent in the world, but if you can't play fundamental baseball when it counts, it's all for a loss. It's just, I think, a real shame for Nationals fans this season with the pitching that they had in that series. Excellent pitching. They had the Giants shut down for much of the series. They essentially lost two games because they couldn't execute fundamentals, and then they also made some questionable decisions at manager.
YSR producer Andy Pondillo is with us tonight in studio, joining us on the Stewart Cadillac guest line, and I know how closely you track these teams. Did you anticipate that Bryce Harper, I mean, you were just talking about those three majestic home runs. I mean, did you see him coming out and having that breakout?
I saw it that he could do some damage, most definitely. I felt like that team, though, what made the Nationals special is the depth of their lineup. Even if you go down to the eight here, as Drubal Cabrera, just a couple years ago, was a top second baseman in the American League, and he's your worst hitter in the lineup. So this lineup was absolutely stacked. It wasn't so much that one guy could take care of everything. It's the fact that they could scrape together runs. They could hit and run. They can hit for power. They just play a different way. You have Denard Span. He can steal bases. It's the multitude of ways he can score runs. That's what I always look for in postseason play, to teams that can score runs in a variety of ways. If they have to win a slugfest, they can win a slugfest. If they have to scrape together three runs, they can scrape together three runs. And the Giants really don't look like that offense, but hey, they got it done. They had a horrible offensive series, but they got it done. There's something to be said about that. And then you look at the St. Louis Cardinals. They didn't hit home runs all year, but now they're bashing the ball like it's home run derby versus the Dodgers. So things change in postseason play, and the teams with experience, the teams that have been there and done that, more times than not, they find ways to win again.
Well, and if you followed that division series, I mean, one thing about the Giants is that they have pitching depth, and that pays very big dividends, doesn't it?
Very good pitching depth with the Giants. I feel like the Nationals had better depth, but, you know, the Giants do have those guys that have been there again. Jake Peavy won the World Series last year. He goes up against Strasburg in Game 1. Pitch for pitch with Strasburg the entire game. That was a huge win for the Giants. You know, each of these wins, you felt like the Nationals have to win this game. You know, there's no way that they're going to lose. They're too stacked. But yet the Giants always found a way to match them pitch for pitch with their veteran staff. Tim Hudson threw an excellent game, that 18-inning game. It's kind of forgotten about because Jordan Zimmermann was about to throw the shutout before the Giants were able to tie it up. Tim Hudson doesn't give you that great effort. It's not getting tied in the ninth. They're not going 18 innings. And then the bullpen doesn't get destroyed from the Nationals. There's a big domino effect that goes into play here. Each game, you have to play it. I don't know if you play it like it's a game seven, but you have to play it like it's almost a game seven, if you will, because each game means so much, especially in a five-game series where you get down by one. It feels a lot worse than being down one in a seven-game set.
Okay, so we're recapping the Giants and the Nationals. But as we look ahead to the weekend games in the championship series, what are the discernible areas that the Giants have got to clean up, Andy, and they have got to do a better job?
When they face the Cardinals, they're going to have to score more runs. It's going to have to happen. They're going to have to find offense from somebody. And they have had quite a few guys on base. So getting on base hasn't been their problem. I thought it would be without their leadoff guy, Angel Pagan, being out for the entire postseason. McGregor Blanco's done a decent job at the top. Panic batting second has done an excellent job. Now the guys in the middle, Posey, Sandoval, Pence, I got to find ways to contribute some more runs. Whether it's just moving the guys in from third with a sack fly, maybe starting to hit some home runs. They're not going to just go beat the Cardinals' brains in. That's about mission impossible when it comes to postseason play. But they have to find ways to keep up with the Cardinals. Neither of these teams exactly mashed the ball, but they're both fundamentally sound teams. So they're not going to give you the game. You're going to have to go out there and take it. The way you're going to take it is with good at-bats, with hit and runs, with moving runners and productive outs.
Okay, our YSR producer, Andy Pondillo, is joining us on the Stewart Cadillac guest line. We have got to step aside for a commercial break. We'll be right back with much, much more as we break it down and look ahead to the championship series with the Giants and the Cardinals. Taking you through the fastest 2 hours in radio right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. Absolutely love hearing from you on this Friday night. Connect with us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports, as we go one-on-one with our producer, Andy Pondillo. He is joining us on the Stewart Cadillac guest line. Well, we are recapping the division series between the Cardinals and the Dodgers. And the Dodgers, how in the world does this happen? I mean, it's a repetitive theme. They spend so much money. They have the names. Why can a team like this not win at the World Series? Are they jinxed?
What was it, $235 million payroll?
Yeah.
Teams try it year after year after year. There's been a few that have won. The Yankees won it in 2009. They basically built their team through free agency, but it usually is not a recipe for success. I do believe in high payrolls. I do believe in spending, but it's got to be within reason. It has to be a mixture of the farm system. It has to be a mixture of free agents and chemistry. Chemistry, chemistry, chemistry. It comes into play a lot more in postseason play. When things start to go wrong, do they rebound? When things start to go wrong for the Cardinals and they're losing 6-1 for Clayton Kershaw, a team that doesn't hit home runs, they always find a way. And you just don't get that sense with the Dodgers year after year. Very good regular season team. Would I sacrifice a few of those regular season wins to win a playoff series from the Dodgers? I'm sure I would. It's baffling sometimes why they can't get over the hump. They were in the NLCS last year. They looked like they could have got it last year. They probably looked like they're in better shape this season, in my opinion. They looked like a pretty dang complete team. The offense was better this season than it was last year with the addition of D. Gordon at the top. They should be able to score runs in a multitude of ways. They just can't get past that hump, and as the St. Louis Cardinals, to their defense, I suppose, that the Cardinals, a lot of teams can't get by them in postseason play. They're just another animal in itself to try and beat. But the Dodgers, they just find ways to self-destruct, and a lot of it from the arm of Clayton Kershaw.
You know, Andy, you drive home the point. The key component is chemistry within a team. How responsible is Don Mattingly?
I feel like Don Mattingly is a little over his head managing over here. It's just, it's a hard team to manage. We've seen this time and time again. We've seen Terry Francona leave the Red Sox because it became too much. There's just too much personalities in that clubhouse. You can't control these guys. But you can't even control the young player in Yasiel Puig. I feel like his emotions are so much of a roller coaster. He strikes out a couple times. He's throwing his equipment. He's losing his mind. You don't see the Cardinals do that. You don't see the Giants do that because they're confident they're going to win. The Dodgers, when they start to fall down, when they're blowing a lead, when their bullpen can't hang on to an eighth inning, all of a sudden you see heads down. You see bats getting thrown. Adrian Gonzalez is starting a fight in game one with Yadier Molina. This does fall on the manager. Their emotions are all over the place. This team is out of control when they get to a postseason scenario. As soon as things start to go wrong, they should be the guys that can come back. And if you go into postseason play and you expect everything's going to go in your way, everything's going to be perfect, and you're just going to win 6-1 during postseason play, it's not going to happen. You're going to have to come back. You're going to have to believe. You're going to have to be able to move runners and score in a different fashion and maybe just sitting there and jacking home runs. Team strikes out too much. I think a lot of it's because they get down on themselves.
Our producer at YSR, Andy Pondillo, is joining us on the Stewart Cadillac guest line. And I don't like to be sarcastic. I mean, you know me, Andy. But Clayton Kershaw, I mean, he needs a mark by his name for being the best regular season pitcher.
Oh, yeah, and by far. He is. There is no one even in this guy's stratosphere when it comes to regular season. So he's going to win that MVP in the National League. Give him the accolades. Give him another Cy Young. It's all beautiful. But there have been players in the past in baseball and any sport that are phenomenal in regular season, not so much in postseason play. Clayton Kershaw, first player in Major League Baseball history to have two consecutive postseason starts and give up 7 or more runs. It's not the fact that he's just been a little off. He's been downright horrible at times in the postseason. It really makes you scratch your head. The last start, he made, absolutely dominant through six innings. He gives up the three-run homer to Matt Adams. The Dodgers lose that game. Easy to point the finger at Kershaw. I will, because he's your guy. You've got to be able to get in the pitcher's duel and win that game. At the same time, the Dodgers not able to put up runs. It does make it hard on a pitcher like Kershaw, who probably needs a little cushion, probably needs a little mental relaxation. But it's just getting to be a tough ride. 1-5, ERA over 5.10 now.
Wow.
For Clayton in postseason play. This is a hump he has to get over. It's the Cardinals. It's postseason play. And if he's going to pitch with the Dodgers for a very long time, which he is with that big contract he has, I assume he's going to face the Cardinals quite a bit through his career.
Okay, so let's look ahead to the championship series. And the Cardinals, I mean, they have really shown just incredible power in postseason play. What is your assessment?
I don't know if they're going to be able to hit for that power versus the Giants. I don't know if they'll be able to hit for that power versus anyone. It seemed quite abnormal, the home runs they were hitting. But, you know, they also got a healthy lineup. Let's not forget, Yadier Molina was hurt for a giant portion of the season. Matt Holliday seems like he's always battling injuries. But once you get him going, he's just as good of a power hitter as anyone there is. Johnny Peralta, he's been a guy that's been in postseason play. So you don't look at these guys that as possible choke artists in the postseason, because you know they've been there, you know they can do it, and they'll probably come through again. I can't expect them to start bashing the ball like they were. Regardless, the Cardinals are a team that can win in any fashion, but so are the Giants, and that's what makes this series so great. Two teams that they just take turns going to World Series in the National League. It's been, you talk about parity, you see it in the American League, you're not seeing it in the National League lately, because these two teams are the class of the league. They know how to get there, they know what to do in postseason play, so that's going to make for an excellent series. The Cardinals have to be favored, in my opinion, just based on their roster. I think this is the weakest of the Giants teams that we've seen in the past three runs they've made, but yet they're still the San Francisco Giants. They still don't panic when the Cards are down, neither do the Cardinals, so I look for this to go six or seven games. I think it's going to be an extremely fun game.
Okay, so you're a savvy guy. Did you anticipate it was going to be the Giants and the Cardinals that would advance?
You know, part of me is kind of upset at myself that I didn't see this coming. I felt like I should have. I had the Cardinals point off the upset. Even in past shows, you remember, Ulysses, I said, watch out for the Giants. We talked Dodgers all season, but watch out for the Giants.
Right.
I still felt like they were a little weak compared to the Nationals, but I guess I shouldn't be surprised. I feel kind of upset at myself that I didn't go for the upset pick on that series, but it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm glad these two teams are facing off again.
Well, looking forward to this weekend's games. And, of course, that's been Andy Pondillo, our Yahoo Sports Radio producer, and has been joining us on the Stewart Cadillac guest line. For the latest deals and models, check out stewartcadillac.com. Always a pleasure. It's good to be hanging out with you on this Friday night, Andy.
Always fun.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR. And join us online at Twitter at eRadioSports. We will be right back. Yes, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, as we are inside the Quicken Loans studios. And in our next conversation, we are going to discuss what it takes to be a leader in the high-performing sports industry. Of course, this is an industry. It is a $750 billion business with many organizations generating just record revenues. Of course, we're thinking back earlier the week, you know, NBA with their massive new TV deal. And you certainly wonder, just many questions. I mean, what are going to be some of the consequences from it? I mean, is this a good thing? It's a huge infusion of cash, and the player salaries are certainly going to be on the rise. Now joining us on our guest line is Adam Grossman. He is the co-author of The Sports Strategist and founder and president of Block 6 Analytics. He is driven by Stewart Cadillac. Stewart Cadillac, real people, real value, real simple. Good evening, Adam. It's nice to have you with us at Yahoo Sports Radio.
It's great to be here.
Well, let's start with the NBA as they announced this $24 billion, with a B, nine-year TV deal with ESPN and Turner. And I know it's enormous, but what does that mean, Adam, as we look ahead and perhaps some of the consequences of it? I mean, is this a win-win?
It's a win-win for the sports organizations. It's a slight loss for fans. So the way that the deal works is the deal increased the NBA media rights revenue by 180%. So it went from about $980 million a year to $2.6 billion a year. And what that means is that NBA teams have more money, the NBA owners have more money, the league has more money, the league has more opportunities to expand offerings. One of the unique parts about this deal is that ESPN is going to be offering a new digital streaming service in which you don't actually have to have a paid TV subscription. You'll be able to get new content and get content from ESPN about certain games strictly through mobile and digital channels without actually having to be an ESPN or cable TV subscriber. So having access to new content, having teams have more money, having your favorite team potentially being able to sign players or sign more players or keep their superstars, those are all things that are really good for the NBA teams and for their fans. Obviously, with the rise in the amount that this in the rise of the television deal, that means the cost of your cable television package, if you're a fan, if you're a bar, if you're a sponsor, if you're a media member, anybody who has actually a pay TV subscription, whether it's cable or satellite, will likely see their prices for their television go up. And the fact that, these costs, especially for live programming, generally speaking, are passed on to the consumer. So while it's good probably for your team, that for your favorite team, you might see a little bit of pinch in your wallet and your bottom line.
Okay, Adam Grossman, the co-author of The Sports Strategist and founder and president of Block 6 Analytics, is joining us tonight on the Stuart Cadillac guest line, and you kind of break all the X's and O's down. It certainly validates, though, the brand of the NBA. I mean, this is the largest increase for a TV deal of any of the four other major sports.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting to look at the competitive position of the NBA while it was negotiating this deal. So what it had, it negotiated this deal in an exclusive two-year window that it had with ESPN and TNT at the time when TNT and ESPN have both announced they're looking for live content and content in general to drive future revenues for their stations, in particular the carriage fees that they have for cable operators. If they're going to try to demand for larger carriage fees, they need to have the content that supports these fees. ESPN makes an estimate about $5.70 or $5.80 per month per cable subscriber. To justify those fees, they need to have the content. At the same time, the NBA was negotiating a deal when deals for the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, pretty much every major college sports league except for the Big Ten Network, had deals in place until at least 2020. So the NBA was basically the only game in town as it was negotiating these deals. It had a really strong competitive position at a time when media rights deals are potentially at their zenith in terms of their value. So I think it does, I think going back to your original point, I think it does justify the brand, but the NBA is really smart in the way that it handled the negotiations in terms of negotiating the deal now with two companies that really needed content at the best time for them to see that they're trying to get content locked up for their future and for their carriage fees.
Adam, the other thing that comes to my mind is, of course, the player salaries are going to increase, but this could prevent a lockout and any stoppage in the future. I mean, we think back to just a few years ago in 2011.
Actually, I think it from the original analysis is actually going to be the opposite. The players have the ability to opt out after the 2016-17 season. And I think the idea is that they're not sure exactly how this new revenue stream is going to work out. So the players, especially star players, including Kevin Durant, has mentioned that, that the maximum salary for players' contracts should go up. Well, NBA owner Mark Cuban in Texas, obviously your neck of the woods, has said, well, if we're going to increase salaries, then we want to get rid of guaranteed contracts. And the NBA players definitely do not want to get rid of guaranteed contracts. They've seen the impact of the lack of non-guaranteed contracts they've had with the NFL. So I think it actually, the more money there is to divide up actually could lead to the NBA players actually thinking about exercising the right to exit the collective bargaining agreement, especially because they think, the large perception is, rightly or wrongly, that they did not do well in the 2011 negotiations where the amount of money that was available to players decreased on average by about $300 million a year league-wide.
Well, it'll be very interesting to see and watch how the pie will be divvied up. And right now we are going one-on-one with Adam Grossman. He is joining us on the Stuart Cadillac guest line. He is the co-author of The Sports Strategist, founder and president of Block 6 Analytics. And there's no doubt, as you state in your book, in The Sports Strategist, the sports industry, it is a dynamic environment, and it is one of the most challenging and fascinating businesses in the world. Tell us about the book that you teamed up on.
Yeah, so our book started off with a relatively simple relatively simple principle, in the fact that most sports organizations, most sports leagues, or most people when they're looking at sports organizations say, a team needs to be successful on the field, on the ice, on the court in order to achieve financial success. So not only do we prove that that's not true, citing examples ranging from the Chicago Cubs and their identity as the lovable losers to the Glasgow Rangers, which is a Scottish Premier League football team or soccer team, in which it won a record 54 league championships over basically a 100-year period. And after it won its 54 title, it declared bankruptcy because it was using what was considered to be an illegal tax scheme to finance and pay for their players and for their coaches. So the idea here is, if it's not winning, if winning is not the only thing you can rely on to have a successful business, what are the factors you can rely on? Especially given some of the topics that we've talked about, you know, as media rights deals come into play, as player costs continue to increase, as, you know, sports organizations, whether professional, collegiate, or high school, are looking at potentially new revenue, new costs, how to attract fans, how to make sure, you know, fans really get to the stadiums. That's a really another huge issue. In an age when there's so much technology and when it's so easy to sit at home and watch your favorite team, and obviously as organizations like ESPN, TNT, and Time Warner are signing these massive media rights deals, how do you still get fans and media and sponsors to come to your venues and attend your games? For a large majority of sports organizations, media rights deals will play an important part of the revenue streams, but in-game attendance, in-game concessions, parking, all those things are going to contribute to major revenue streams, if not the major revenue stream for organizations. So, and then the last thing we really like to focus on, or we really wanted to focus on, is crisis management. Given everything that's gone on in the NFL and
right.
with the NBA,
also,
you know, those are areas we want to put in front of our readers. What are the key issues going on in the sports industry? How can you analyze those issues, and how can you potentially create novel approaches to deal with those problems?
Well, you hit on a number of things, and that's one of the questions I had for you today, was about connecting with the fans on a deeper level. I mean, we've discussed this many times on our show in college football, some of the changes and the trends that we're starting to see take place, obviously better Wi-Fi in stadiums, and enhancing the overall fan experience.
Yeah, exactly. And again, connecting these concepts is something we argue for in the book. You know, the most successful sports strategist is somebody who, you know, there's been a lot of specialization, not just in the sports industry, but in other industries as well, where people have becoming more and more laser focused on their specific job function or their specific thing that they're looking at, when you need to, you know, a lot of times you need to take a more holistic approach. For example, with the NFL, or with the NBA, with Donald Sterling, you know, you can see how the NBA responded and the reason that they created a lifetime ban and acted so quickly with Donald Sterling in the fact that you could look at the economic components of crisis. The Clippers were getting, you know, a lot of sponsors were threatening to leave the Clippers. The Clippers were one of the most economically successful franchises in the NBA. Having somebody who could compromise those revenue streams based off the crisis he generated is something to, you know, something that we really examined in more detail in some of the blog posts that we've written, in addition to some of the topics we've covered in the book. So the idea here is, how do you see the integration of these different concepts? How do you apply those different concepts? And how do those apply to your job, whether you're interested in the sports industry or working in a different industry as well?
Okay, we are visiting with Adam Grossman tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He is joining us on the Stuart Cadillac guest line. I think one of the things that we need to point out too, Adam, is that how paramount it is to capitalize on the technological assets and rewarding the fans. That's the bottom line. You got to take care of your fans.
Absolutely, and I think that's where technology really has a large availability or a large ability to impact the sports industry. One of the things that really has come into play in the sports industry is there's so much more data, whether it's through social media, whether it's through dynamic ticket pricing, whether it's through sponsorships. There's so much more information available to sports teams, and sports teams need to use that information in order to encourage fans to be, participate with those organizations. So one of the things we've talked about in a blog post that we recently published for Forbes is, you know, the use of technology with Major League Baseball, in particular iBeacon technology. So basically that technology sends deals directly to fans that they're really interested in based off their past purchasing behavior and based on things that activities they've participated while at the venue. So, you know, if you want to know where your favorite concession is, if you want to know, you know, if you want to buy for your son and daughter the jersey of your favorite player, if you want to even know where the closest, you know, restroom is, so you can make sure that when you do buy concessions that you're not standing in a long line to use the restroom, or you can find a restroom quickly. All those things add up to a better fan experience. And using technology to drive people to the venue and using technology to engage people with an organization is absolutely critical to be successful in the sports industry.
Okay, you're listening to the voice of Adam Grossman. He's the co-author of The Sports Strategist, founder and president of Block 6 Analytics. Of course, he is joining us on the Stuart Cadillac guest line. I think one of the things, my takeaways from the book, too, is, you know, winning for an organization is not the only factor. I mean, and you pointed out the Florida Marlins. I mean, that doesn't necessarily translate into long-term success. You've got to be able to do it in other ways, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And part of what we argue for in the book, using the example of the Marlins, you know, they've won two titles. They won two titles in a relatively short amount of time. But then when they tried to integrate and build a new stadium, they didn't necessarily factor in some of the things we would consider when, you know, making a place marketing decision for a sports organization. In particular, the stadium that they built, largely using public funds, was placed in a location that's really difficult to get to, by both by public transportation and by, you know, just driving your car. There's a very limited amount of parking that's available. So, just having a location, thinking about the location of a new venue is absolutely critical when you're thinking about potentially building a new venue. And some of the, one of the venues we talk about in the book is the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C., which was built downtown in an area that, an area that has been revived because largely because of the Verizon Center. And the Verizon Center is successful because it's at the intersection of where the Metro, which is the public transportation system that's in D.C., it's right near a bunch of Metro subway stops. It's right near Capitol Hill. It's where the Capitol is, obviously, and where a bunch of people live and work in D.C. Giving that access to people so they don't necessarily need to have their own cars. It's easy access by public transportation, and it really integrates with the neighborhood, in this case, the Chinatown neighborhood that's existed in Washington, D.C.
Adam Grossman, the co-author of The Sports Strategist and founder and president of Block 6 Athletics. It is a very well-written book, and of course, he's been joining us on the Stuart Cadillac guest line for the latest details and models. Check them out at stuartcadillac.com. Adam, it's a pleasure, and I promise we will be back in touch with you again real soon. It always seems like crisis management is at the forefront nationally, so we'll extend the invitation once again, okay?
Yeah, that would be great. Hopefully there's not a crisis, but it would be great for that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, on this Friday night. Okay, we are back inside the Quicken Loan Studios at YSR right here in Houston, and very anxious to visit with our next guest in our weekly Under the Helmet segment. And just to recap for all of you tonight, five of the top eight teams lose in Week 6 as the rankings are turned upside down. And it is time now to welcome into the guest line Husker great Jason Peter, driven by Stuart Cadillac. Stuart Cadillac, real people, real value, real simple. Good evening, Jason. It's nice to have you on.
How you doing, E?
I'm doing okay. Better than last Saturday, because when we revisit some of the chaos that transpired and took place, I was at that Fort Worth, the TCU-OU matchup, and it was pretty difficult to watch. I will share with everyone tonight, I mean, TCU, no doubt, they were the better team.
Yeah, and I think, there's quite a few people that weren't real sure about what Gary Patterson had down there. We kept hearing that, they're legit and he's kind of got things back on the straight and narrow, especially, defensively. They've obviously had issues, with a few individual players over the past couple of years, important players, but it's no different than any other team. But it seems like Gary Patterson, Oklahoma was kind of my dark horse. Not that Oklahoma
really?
Could be a
okay.
dark horse,
mm-hmm.
but, a lot of the attention was Florida State, Alabama, obviously Oregon prior to the loss, and nobody was really talking about OU. So I kind of thought this is the year maybe Big Game Bob is back and he's going to find himself in that college football playoff.
Uh-huh.
Sure enough, Gary Patterson had other plans, but you got to tip your cap to TCU and the job that they did. I think that's a pretty good Oklahoma team they just beat.
Well, Jason, right now it's anybody's guess who's going to be left standing in one of those top four playoff teams. Who is your pick at this point in the season?
For all four or
sure.
just – well, I think, you got to like Florida State's chance of getting there. There's going to be an SEC team, at least one, that gets back. Maybe Alabama in terms of a one-loss team. You still have a couple undefeateds. Obviously, the state of Mississippi is real happy right now. That's going to be an interesting game, watching those two go at it. And you never know who can kind of creep back in. But, Oregon losing to Arizona, that was a shock. Auburn looks real good. Disappointed, obviously, Sooners. Nebraska did not show well.
Oh.
Not that they were up towards the top, but they certainly
right.
they were ranked high enough that if they took care of business, they'd be in the conversation at the end, and they just did not show up for the first three quarters.
Okay, so Jason, you're talking about somebody, and you rattle off the traditional powers, Alabama, Oklahoma, Texas A&M. We're seeing what cracks in their foundation. Do you think these are flawed teams that are just living off the reputations from years past?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I think kids also there's a lot of young kids that are playing nowadays. These coaches are going out and looking for these impact freshmen. Well, these impact freshmen, they haven't been through, you know, your so-called wars. They haven't been in the four-quarter battles. And, you know, there are also kids that are coming straight out of high school. They've had, you know, the articles and the rivals and everybody else that have, you know, written about them as, you know, they're the next Hall of Fame guy to play the position. And you know, I think that when sometimes these teams, these players get down, I think lots of times they don't know how to react to adversity and or to react from being down and having to battle back. And I think that's why sometimes you see some of these powers that go down. Obviously, the bigger the power, the chances are that they have more of those 4- and 5-star guys that fill their rosters. And sometimes those teams, you know, you just see it. I mean, Michigan State, I talked because I watched that game very closely, the Michigan State-Nebraska. I mean, you saw two different teams, two different mentalities. One, you had Michigan State, that they were like this blue-collar team that was just, I mean, they were going looking for a fight. I mean, they wanted somebody to come and get in their face. And the Nebraska team, it was like, you know, you line them up next to each other, man for man. I put my money on Nebraska. They look better. They got better football players, better athletes. But Michigan State just handed it to them, One
right.
team was looking for the fight. The other one wasn't.
Okay, Jason Peter is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He is on the Stewart Cadillac guest line. And what about in the SEC, though, Jason? I mean, you're just referencing, talking about the Big Ten Conference, but Ole Miss and Mississippi State, I mean, what kind of renaissance is taking place there?
I mean, with Michigan, with Mississippi State, Dak Prescott, I mean, the quarterback.
Okay, yeah.
And you're kind of seeing it. I mean, you know, everything trickles down from the NFL. The NFL has turned into, you know, it's quarterback-driven league. And eventually it trickles down, and you're seeing it, not that it's just become, but it's even more evident now, I think, when you look at some of these teams. I mean, look what Johnny Manziel did with Texas A&M.
Right,
And Texas A&M still successful, but, you know, he kind of jump-starts that whole thing. Is Dak Prescott the next guy who kind of jump starts a program like that? But, I mean, he looks good. And when you look at a lot of those teams, they all have kind of, you know, this superior player at quarterback position. The only thing that they hope is that Katy Perry doesn't go on ESPN game day and say that she's got a crush on their quarterback, because that's the kiss of death.
Oh, my soul. Okay, that has been Jason Peter, Husker Great, on the Stewart Cadillac guest line for the latest deals and models. Check out stewartcadillac.com. Okay, Jason Peter, I can't wait to listen to your perspective next week. Thank you so much. Enjoy the games and be good.
Thanks for having me.
A very special thank you to all of our guests and lineup. Of course, we were just visiting with Jason Peter in our weekly Under the Helmet segment. Big thank you to Andy Pondillo, our producer at YSR. James Hale, the senior writer with OU Insider and KREF Radio in Norman, Oklahoma. Tom Flores, legendary coach in the NFL. Adam Grossman, and of course, the head coach of the Portland Trailblazers. A big thank you to Terry Stotts. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell, encouraging you not to drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.